you're listening to Lifeguard IT, a podcast about diving into the deep end of enterprise IT. Brought to you by Lakeside Software.
An industry leader in workspace analytics, Lakeside Software has been helping organizations improve their end-user experience for over 20 years. Our unique method of endpoint data collection helps enable business productivity by providing you with key insights into your users, the business processes that encompass their jobs, and the technologies they use to get work done. From continuously monitoring your end users' experiences to planning for your next transformation project, Lakeside's analytics suite helps you optimize your environment every step of the way.
To learn more, visit lakesidesoftware.com. This is Heather Bicknell here with my co-host, Linda Sal. Linda, did you get a chance to see the solar eclipse the other day?
I did. So I wasn't in the path of totality, so I didn't have quite the experience that some people did, but I did get to poke the hole through the paper and see that little shadow. Did you?
Yeah, it was about 80% coverage in Michigan, right?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I actually drove down to Kentucky to be in the path of totality, so I think we saw completely different things, even though we were both viewing the eclipse at the same time.
Yeah, so how did you view it? Through glasses or?
Yeah, we got some glasses, you know, made sure they were the real ones so we didn't burn our eyeballs off.
Yeah, that's one way to view the sun. Sort of straight into it. Talk about poor user experience.
I know, right? Speaking of user experience, today's episode is all about the user. Oftentimes in IT, we focus solely on the technology. Why is this application crashing? What's causing latency issues on a system? It's easy to lose sight of why we care about performance issues in the first place, which is that poorly performing technology prevents people from doing their jobs. The reason the end user frequently gets lost in the discussion is that many enterprise IT teams have no way of understanding the perspective of the end user, apart from subjective feedback and piling service desk tickets. But there is a way to measure and track the end user experience, and that's what we're going to share with you today. But first, a quick follow-up from our previous episode on Windows 10, where I mentioned the inherent awkwardness I felt in using Cortana on my desktop.
Yeah, so we actually did find an article where someone made a very interesting point on the AI race in technology.
A quick little editorial note here. The article we're referring to is actually written by Tom Warren at The Verge, and it's titled, "Former Microsoft Exec Reveals Why Amazon's Alexa Voice Assistant Beat Cortana." All right, now back to Linda.
Specifically about Cortana, Siri, and Alexa, and why Alexa seems to be used the most out of all of them. Even though they seem to hold the same functionality, she made a statement where Alexa is its own device and you can use it as its own specific AI device versus Siri, where it's integrated in your phone, or Cortana, where it's integrated in your laptop, and then maybe you don't use it the way that they implied.
Yeah, this Verge article made a lot of sense to me, and I believe it was actually pulling from something that a former Microsoft employee who had worked on Cortana said about the device.
Yeah. And she did mention that they were thinking about expanding Cortana into more of an Internet of Things kind of aspect. So putting it in like your fridge, microwave, that kind of thing. But then it makes me think, like, I already turned off Siri on my phone. Like, am I going to want these smart appliances? It seems like it's a really big goal for everyone to have like, oh, my fridge told me I ran out of eggs. But like, I don't know if I really want that. Like, will I really use it?
Yeah, there's kind of, there's the choice still in those kind of devices, but I don't know how long it's going to take until, just like smartphones, you don't really have a choice anymore. I mean, you can do what you did and disable the assistant, but how soon will we just start having Internet of Things, technology and all of our stuff? Probably not that soon, I would expect, because it's going to be expensive and it's going to require, a connection to the internet.
Yeah, all those different hardware and processors that'll probably have to go into this is interesting. I know Nintendo's already battling Apple for processors with their new technology, so that's another concept to consider. Another thing to think about is even security. I know a lot of people don't want other companies to know what they're even buying off Amazon or groceries. It becomes too personal at that point, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Definitely. Starting in on our main topic for today, which is the end user experience, So a lot of people are familiar with the concept of user experience, or also known as UX in design, which is where designers look for ways to improve user engagement with a product by specifically thinking about users' needs and also their desires, you know, what makes a product enjoyable. We've actually had a little bit of personal experience with this lately. We've done some work creating a new website for our company, so that was very exciting. Here with us to talk about that a little bit is Patricia Diaz, who is the product marketing manager at Lakeside. Patricia, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So Patricia, during our revamp for our new website, was there anything that was super challenging or surprising to you?
Yeah, so something that was very challenging, very time consuming for me and the team was the design aspect, choosing pages, designs that would stand the test of time to, you know, the best of our abilities, understanding that we'll have this site for a long time and that content might change and that, you know, best practices for design might change. So when we chose the design for each page, we tried to think about, okay, can we use this in the future, even if a lot of, you know, the stuff that we want to feature there changes. So really choosing designs that, to the best of our knowledge, would look good, you know, in 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And I think earlier you mentioned that you even paid attention to how your eyes would flow.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that, I relied a lot on our designers and their expertise on that. But they, you know, they showed us some comps where instead of everything being centered, they would center something, then the next block would be off to the left, off right, just so that it would be easier to read and scroll down. It would be more intuitive for you to go through the site and read more.
Yeah, that definitely feels like a part of the whole UX design process. Was there anything else that the team thought about when in terms of the user experience when working on the new site?
Yeah, there were aspects that we'd be reviewing some of the iconography, thinking about, does this feel clickable? Would someone want to click on this? Would someone even think about clicking on this? Or does it just look static? So even small items like that, that before I never even thought about, really came to the forefront when we were being very nitpicky in terms of every single aspect of every page. So it was a big project. We all learned a lot.
So it seems like you have a lot of experience revamping our website by now. Do you have any advice for maybe someone who's thinking about doing the same thing?
I would say, first and foremost, give yourself time. It is a large project, something that will take a lot of effort. So I'd say 6 months is the sweet spot. And then secondly, and maybe even most importantly, make sure that the content that you feature is concise but straightforward. I think many times when you're writing about what you do and what your company does, you can get carried away by everything that it does. Right? Everything that you're bringing to the market. And sometimes that's not what a visitor wants to see right off the bat. Sometimes they go to your site and they just want to understand, okay, who is Lakeside or what is Systrack? Just what is it at a basic level? And then if they want to learn a little bit more, you need to be strategic in terms of where you place, you know, that content, keeping that end user, that visitor in mind in terms of how you organize the content, you know, having information about the company under the company tab might seem like obvious, but sometimes you might be going on the contact page to figure out just how to contact that, you know, company. So many times you need to have your contact information there. You need to have your contact information at the bottom of the page, on the company page. So being strategic in terms of the places where you include certain types of content is really important too. But overall, I think every website creation process is different. But those to me were the biggest lessons that I learned in this process.
Yeah, I really think there is a lot to say about just making things easy for people, making them intuitive.
Absolutely.
And just giving people what they want when they come to your site, you know, really putting yourself in other people's shoes in that way.
Of course. I think, you know, you can have the best content in the world, but if you don't organize it in a way that makes sense, it just won't get to the end user or the visitor, whoever it is your audience, you know, is that you're trying to target. So good content is just as important as organization and making sure that it flows.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned putting our contact in multiple places, because, like, I know as a user, if you're scrolling through a website and you're, like, getting bombarded, even if it's, like, really concise information, it's a lot of information. So if I did want to, like, ask more about SysTrack, the button's always just, like, there for you, mm-hmm. versus, like, okay, now where do I have to go, like, and, like, kind of think that through. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a learning process, but happy to have the website up, and I hope our listeners visit and enjoy the site.
Yeah, it looks great.
Thanks.
Well, thanks for joining us, Patricia. This has been a great discussion about the website and a little bit about user experience and design. So
thank you for having me. Anytime.
So now we're going to talk about the end user experience as more of an IT concept. More like, what is it? How can we measure it? And, like, what benefits can you get from measuring it? So we toss a term around a lot, end user experience, but what is it? So really, it's just how a user is experiencing their environment. It's as easy as that.
Yeah, so going off of how we talked about, you know, UX design when it comes to websites, people are pretty familiar with, you know, it's right away if something on a website, you know, kind of bothers you, like stands out as, oh, I tried to click on this image and I realized it wasn't actually clickable. You know, that's kind of a weird experience. Like, you feel that it's palpable. So similar to that, when your users are on their systems at work and their application is crashing or faulting or they can't do what they want to do because of a system issue, that's when you notice your end user experience. Not really when things are going well, but when things are impacting your system. So it's helpful to think about end user experience from that perspective of, you know, 100% is when a user doesn't know anything is wrong. And when, from an IT perspective, we can use metrics to also see that their system is performing perfectly. So that's kind of the ultimate goal, is to have a user not notice that anything's going wrong.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept to bring up, because to go back to our website, is that going back to the thought process of having our contact information everywhere, like, if you have to think about it, then you already maybe don't have a great end user experience, versus, okay, all their contact information is right here, I can just click on it, instead of thinking, oh, I have to go back to the company tab, I gotta say, find us here, and stuff like that. So,
yeah, absolutely. So we've defined what end user experience is. Now we're going to talk a little bit about, how can you actually capture that? How do you measure the end user experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I know that a good way to measure end user experience is to simply consider the KPIs, so key performance indicators. So KPIs usually include measuring things like CPU, disk, network, latency, startup time, so on and so forth, and they mash it together and average it to be able to hopefully have a score and to be able to trend that data of end user experience.
Yeah, so basically by capturing a lot of detailed data about your, you know, at the endpoint with your end users on their systems, you can use sort of summaries of that data to see what the biggest impacts on their system were, like those KPIs like we were talking about. And then all of those KPIs, you know, get molded together to sort of tell you what their experience looks like as a whole. And then you can trend that experience as a score to see over time, how is their system performing? You know, how many hours a week are they being negatively impacted, you know, being prevented from being productive to the best of their ability by their computer issues.
So it's interesting that you bring up productivity, because I'm sure the next question for this is, like, how does end user experience scores even benefit us?
Like, why should I care?
Right, exactly. And, like, I know from a higher level, a lot of people like to link high end user experience with high productivity, therefore a very high success for the company, which is great, because if you think about it, if your system is running as well gelled as everyone says it's going to, and, like, the user's not experiencing any impacts, any, like, negative faults or applications crashing on them, then they can be the most productive, and then that increases success for the company overall.
So by focusing on the end user experience and tracking that versus depending on users to give you feedback, like service desk, you're just guaranteed to be able to see what their experience actually looks like. You know, there's a lot of user frustration with IT. You know, this is kind of a long-running story of people's relationships with IT professionals.
Yeah, and it's always hard to tell, like, there's some users that are pickier than others, so some will definitely report help desk tickets whenever they experience any sort of, like, network latency, versus being able to see at enterprise level and being able to compare, okay, this is actually an issue that everyone's experiencing, but just one person has decided to speak up about it. So that could be another interesting way to use and trend end user experience.
Yeah. And on the flip side, you can also see, you know, a lot of people, maybe they have just accepted a poor level of experience and they just don't really think about it or don't think about doing anything with it. But with the end user experience score, even if people aren't reporting issues, you can still see that they're experiencing problems. So it just gives you an opportunity to sort of normalize what your environment truly looks like instead of relying on user feedback, which, you know, you could be getting pretty subjective results depending on what your users are like.
Definitely. And to even link back to our last podcast about migrating to Windows 10, monitoring end user experience can also be extremely helpful for any sort of desktop transformation to be able to proactively see how are my users interacting with their environment now? How great is it? Are they ready to go virtual? Are they ready for a new update for their operating system? And then even a post performance monitoring, do they still like their new operating system? Can they still handle their new, like, virtual desktop infrastructure and stuff like that? So
yeah, it's just a great indicator of whether or not things are working for people. If you see an immediate drop off in user experience score for someone after you put them on Windows 10, then there's a high chance that when you go in there, you might find that there's, you know, there was a variable you didn't consider, or for some other reason, they're having issues with the update. And then you can go back in and find the root cause of that issue and work to fix it instead of waiting for that service desk ticket to roll in.
So I guess you could say basically that monitoring the end user experience and having that score gives you a higher level view of the enterprise.
All right. I think that's a great point to end on. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so at lifeguardit@gmail.com. You can also find us on your favorite podcast app and subscribe. That would be wonderful. You can also find us at VMworld US and VMworld Barcelona coming up very shortly here. We'll have recaps of those events on our blog as well, so be sure to check that out. We'll catch you in 2 weeks.